5 with the administrative portion of our meeting today. There are no items on the consent calendar, so we'll move right into discussion. And there's the North Dakota REC's Association workshop that Victor Shook wanted to talk about.
Thank you. So I think all three of you had received this email, but essentially the North Dakota Association of Rural Electric Cooperatives is having some workshops to identify high ambition critical infrastructure projects and potential funding sources, largely kind of driven by the IIJA opportunities, and they've specifically asked if we're interested in cooperating with them on this. So I guess the long and the short of this is just looking for your authorization for me to go forward with participating in those workshops and helping in any way we possibly can.
Well, I put this off and then neglected to get back to it. So I'm sorry, especially sorry to the RECs. I'm not as familiar as I ought to be with their request. When they say to participate...
It's listed here. It's in the, if you want to look at it. There.
Are they asking for help, like funding something or organizing it?
No. This isn't. It's more so just kind of our potential feedback, ideas. It's really more of a just some assistance, some thoughts and ideas, I think, is largely what they're going for.
Isn't it, for starters, just participating in the workshop?
Yes. They're not asking for anything beyond that at this point.
It's just to have a seat at the table.
Yep.
We're invited to have a seat at the table. With all the funding that's out there.
Yeah, right. I definitely think we should.
And I would agree. We're not often invited to cooperative things, so I think we need to encourage that extent possible. So with your agreement, I will let them know that either myself or someone else with staff will participate, and if we need to bring one or the three of you in at some point, we certainly will. But
tell them we support ambitious projects.
Will do. And I have another item, but if Conrad, maybe he's not here yet, so maybe I can fill some time with.
But also, to eliminate confusion, if they say, oh yeah, bring all three of them, if they're available, make sure they know that makes it a public meeting.
Certainly.
Groups don't want to deal with all that.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, and you had a discussion matter number 3?
Yes, I do, if that's okay. So I had been working on this on and off, and I just didn't have a chance with being out yesterday to get it added to the agenda. So the Clean Energy Innovator Fellowship, this is something Julie had passed along. So I'll come back to you with more of a plan a little bit later, but I have got some detail from the folks who organized this. But the long story short is the state, or really anyone for that matter, can come up with some sort of project they want to do. As the name implies, they largely center around clean energy types of things, but they don't have to. In some of the other examples, there were looking at grid things, looking at transmission things. So my tentative plan is to look at what other states have done with this program in the past, and essentially, if we get our program approved to be part of this fellowship, the DOE essentially would fund one person to do the work on our behalf per our guidance. So essentially there is a mentor who would likely be me who is in charge of the program, and then the staff person they would assign could be entirely remote. They could be part-time here, but we would get approximately 1 to 2 years worth of an FTE. And from what we've heard, they're very good FTEs. These aren't folks fresh out of college who don't know what they're doing and will take a year to get something done. But if we can get a plan in place or a goal of what we're trying to accomplish.
And do you have an idea or an example of what kind of project we might be?
I did look up some historic ones here.
While you're looking, Victor, some of our colleagues in other states have done this and have had really good success. Great additional staff members who are smart and ready to engage and focus in on whatever extra area. And as Vic and I talked about it, we tried to kind of come up with some areas of work where we just don't have enough time to get to it, but it's important stuff. And I think we identified, why don't you throw out the few ideas that we kind of came up with that might be specific to North Dakota projects that we thought sure. would be valuable.
So one project Indiana had last year was state engagement in MISO long-term transmission planning. That was one that really caught my attention as more so something we could adapt to what we're doing here. And it's not really focused on the clean energy portion of it. Some other ones would be rate design for transition to transactive energy. I mean, you could adapt that to look at our rate design for distributed energy resources if potentially there's some changes to be made there. We could have this person do studying of what other neighbor states are doing.
Didn't we have a couple others, Rick? I can't.
Yeah, there's quite a few on the list.
States, well, not what other states are doing, what we talked about us doing. I didn't write those down. Did you?
The one that comes to my mind is maybe some kind of strategizing for understanding all the impacts with large data processing centers that might not always be so visible when the application shows up.
Yeah.
And I don't know where my list of...
Not congestion.
Yep.
Congestion was one that we were looking at all the congestion issues. What are some non-wire solutions to congestion? Wire and non-wire solutions. Data processing could fit in there. EV rate structures for how we can properly structure the rates to, address the EV wave that may be slow, may be fast, but, we're going to have some rate structures for that, and then dealing with the requests of the utilities to invest in EV infrastructure themselves. So that's a whole bucket that we just don't have staff to dig into that. It's a huge bucket.
Well, I sure don't object to moving, investigating more, but watch out for hooks.
Well, right, and I completely agree with that. So the applications are due April 27th, which is the date of our next commission meeting. So what my plan is at this stage is to work on coming up with some plans myself, along with the three of you, if any of you have additional ideas for potential proposals we can come up with. And we're not limited to one, so we can submit multiple separate projects. And we could be selected for multiple projects. It doesn't look likely, but it's possible. One thing we found in the write-up was they're very interested in having a diverse mix of projects that are approved and states that are approved. So I think with that in mind, there's not a lot of other small states like us, that have been selected in the past. So we have a pretty good chance of getting at least one, if not multiple, projects approved.
I'm confident when they see how innovative we are, they'll be jumping on board.
As mm-hmm. they should. So, as I said...
And they did reach out directly asking us to apply, so that exactly. suggests that they're interested.
Can you forward the initial email just so we can look at it?
I'll absolutely forward it out to the three of you. There's not a lot of detail in there. I've mostly had to do a lot of digging behind the scenes, and we've reached out to the person who forwarded this to Julie, and they've sent me some more information as well. So I'll send what I have to the three of you. If there's other ideas other than what we've talked about that you have, please let me know. And then my plan will be to come with a number of proposals to you during the next meeting. Whichever one or ones you would like me to submit, I'll submit by the end of that day.
Well, it's interesting to note that the DOE is receiving a lot of money to do a lot of different projects.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They have their hand in a lot of things going on.
They do.
Yeah. So, look forward to receiving the information.
Yeah, there was $1 trillion in the IIJA, so trillion is a lot more than a billion, which is a lot.
We all need our hands.
What would we do without them?
Yeah, if we were to start spending $20 a second, do you know how long it would take you to spend $1 trillion? Any guesses?
I don't.
Just throw out a guess.
$5
$20 a second. You said 5 years. He says 10,000. What do you
think? I think it would be in the 1,000-year range or something.
It's like 1,850 years. $20 a second.
I'm gonna keep a few of them in my pocket and not spend it.
That just shows you the magnitude. When you start, we just get desensitized to what $1 trillion is because they talk about it all the time. And what are we? 28, 30 trillion dollars
in
debt?
30 trillion in debt.
Yep. It's real stuff, people.
Glad we're ending on a positive note with...
Well, we're not quite done, so we have pipeline.
She was setting the stage.
Setting the stage.
Pipeline safety operator training. We'll turn it over to Conrad to update us.
Thank you, commissioners. I come with you not seeking approval for anything, and just at this point giving a update. So, Commissioner Haugenhoffert, I know this will be your first cycle going through this. Commissioner Christman and Commissioner Fedorchak, it's been a while since we've hosted this, since pre-COVID, actually. So part of our requirement with FEMSA for the Pipeline Safety Program is that we host a operator safety training once every 3 years. So one thing that we've done, we've worked with the state of South Dakota, and this is the conference, the Pipeline Operator Safety Training, that we work in conjunction with them where they host it 1 year, we skip a year, and then we host it the following year. And so at this point, the last time this was done was by South Dakota in 2021 as a virtual event. And so we're up on rotation. We're due this year. And so I've been working with Caleb and Shelley and myself to go through getting familiar with it. It's the first time that all three of us have ever planned this event. So we're combing through our archives, and at this point we are looking to schedule this operator training as a one-day event. In previous years it's been a day and a half, but we believe it can be condensed into 1 day and simplify for the operators, especially since we usually try to host it in March and April this year. That's not going to happen because it's kind of pre-construction, it's kind of pre-busy season for them. But what we're proposing is we're going to look at hosting this at the beginning of October. Trying to steer clear November, given last year with the snowstorms that happened early November. We don't want this thing to get postponed or canceled to the point where we have to try to plan it again. And so we're looking at the beginning of October and working around commission days. And the two venues that we're exploring right now would be having it at the Heritage Center in their auditorium. I would feel that would be a conducive learning environment there. And then also potentially Gateway to Science Center, since that new facility has opened up and it's a beautiful area. We can use grant funding to secure the venue and to fund portions of the training. The training is done by FEMSA, and if there's any other guest speakers that we may try to get in there that are dealing with any relevance in the pipeline safety industry for the operators. But FEMSA primarily completes the training, so we're working with them to coordinate to make sure the schedules line up and jive at that point. And so that's kind of the update of where we're at. We're doing some final checks on the venues to see, make sure they can accommodate what we're looking for. There's usually probably about four vendors, like kind of commercial vendors that show up that like to have a presence at these things where they just have a table and have some of their stuff out. So for the pipeline companies, and so we work to accommodate them as well. And typically, some of those vendors may sponsor like a break. They'll pay for the coffee and the snack during the break period or something like that as well. So completely separate from the commission in that sense doing some of those things. So
how many people in the past have attended?
We are looking, in the past, there's been, anywhere from, 70 to 150, depending upon the location, venue, and what operators can break away from that. And this training does complete check some boxes for these operators, so it's kind of one of those required trainings that they have as well to send some individuals to. So I think in the past we've hosted it down at what used to be the Ramcota. I can't remember what they changed their name to.
I remember it at the Comfort Inn, too.
Yeah, it's probably been up there as well. And so we're trying to stay away. And since we're looking at a one-day event, showcasing and having it at a little bit of a nicer venue. And
the BSC Energy Center is nice too. Are they?
Yeah.
Is the
and all catering
New Prairie or the new Gateway to Science expensive?
It's more expensive than the Heritage. The Heritage Center, I think, has like comes in at like, I think like $250 for the venue, and the Gateway to Science is like $1,100. But we're trying to use that and also as an avenue to give the attendees, you know, like plus their registration would include admission to the center as well, so they could go and check some things out there. And so the grant fund can pay for the venue space on that as well.
Cool. Good work.
Yeah, I think the last time it was at this hotel by BSC. No,
I don't remember being there.
I'm
Hampton? The Hampton?
The Hampton. I think it's
It's been at a few different places.
At any rate, I was just going to say, you said you're watching for commission meeting dates and stuff. One thing to maybe keep an eye on, because I assume the date is probably on there, is Upper Great Plains Transportation Institute still in early October?
Mm-hmm.
And you probably want to go to that.
Yep.
Okay.
I think that's usually in the first or second week of October, so you might just want to check that.
Calendar is pretty update. Maybe we'll work with Pamela, a little bit as far as
don't feel obligated to work around my schedule.
Okay.
It's not going to be conducive to it.
Anything,
time frame.
Really. So
what?
We'll certainly work with Pamela especially ensure that Commissioner Haugenhofer, that you're available when we do schedule it. And then we'll block off your calendar. We'll put a tentative block on it once we get things finalized. So.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Any questions from the commissioners?
No. Good job.
Right.
Thanks.
We look forward to hosting.
I look forward to it as well. I think it'll be a great event. It's the first time. So thank you for your time.
Any other discussion items? Are there any scheduling items? We have none on the calendar, but we can always add.
I could do a brief discussion on 2009, the ag budget and the siting amendments, if you
wish.
Okay. So the ag commissioner and Mike Brandenburg have drafted amendments. That's one bucket of amendments. Those amendments went to Levi, Andrus, and Carly, and they kind of have edited those amendments, so that's a second bucket of amendments. And then we provided amendments, which I believe Pamela distributed to you guys. Yesterday as well. I got a call right before the meeting from Glenn Bosch, who's working on this on behalf of Majority Leader LaFleur, to try to find some sort of simple way forward to get to the most essential, limit it to the most essential issues, and get prepared to deal with the broader issues at the next legislative session so there can be a more appropriate process for public testimony, et cetera. So Jack is drafting some amendments focusing on the perpetual easement issue, which is sort of uniformly, everyone agrees that's a problem. Try to deal with that, as well as provide a little more transparency to the plans that are ultimately determined on mitigation. So the draft would require any mitigation plans that are pursued to be filed with us and the Ag Commissioner so we can all see what they're doing. And then finally create a study that a shall study on the broader issue. And Jack and I had a number of ideas of things that would be helpful to get more information on to feed a better discussion on all of these issues. So that's where it stands right now. And as soon as we're done, those aren't really our amendments. That's just what LaFleur and Glenn Bosch would like to see. And so I said, since Jack is so familiar with the siting law and how to do this in a way that doesn't create unintended consequences, they agreed to have him draft those proposed amendments, so we'll get those over to them.
In these mitigation plans, is there any money in those?
That's all determined as part of the mitigation effort. So, yeah, I mean, usually there is. This wouldn't address that. Nope. That would be dealt with in the study. Yep. So it would continue kind of as it is now, except for there wouldn't be any perpetual easements that would be allowed, and they'd have to file what's being done with us and the Ag Commissioner so we can all see what's happening and be more informed for a more fulsome discussion through the study process and the next legislative session, have some good solutions hopefully prepared.
I can't help but just feel like it's ironic that a lot of people who are so determined and maybe not even determined, so enthusiastic about every single wind construction project, then and just welcomes these developers with open arms and has absolutely zero trust in the mitigation plans that they're going to do. That we have to have all these reviews and new laws and rules on how the money's going to... They totally don't trust them to do something and yet embrace them like I've almost never seen before.
Well, the trust is, the lack of trust is on Game and Fish. That's where they're directed. The lack of trust is.
But it's the developers that are working out the plans with them.
Right. So. But there's been plenty of talk about over the course of the last few months that there'd be a decent number of folks who'd be comfortable if there was no mitigation required at all. So.
I expect that's pretty much what we're going to get.
Well,
there'll be money spent, but not really mitigation.
Well, and that's, not with this. If it moves, could be, depending on how these amendments come through, but if it's a more focused approach on what the most urgent issue is, then we should have an opportunity to look more broadly at the bigger issue and have a responsible plan for the next session. That's my hope.
Hope so too. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all the work you've put into it.
And Jack has done a ton of work too. Just tons of it. So his expertise is valuable.
Anything else we should discuss? I think everyone's aware that the House version of our bill was approved yesterday, not unanimously, but almost unanimously, far more than what is required for the emergency clause to pass. And so we'll see what the response is from the Senate appropriators to the House's amendments.
I have a question.
I think we're all aware of that, so I don't know if there's anything to really discuss.
So the Senate is going to take that up. How soon does that happen?
Well, it has to get signed and sent over, and I don't know how backed up they are with getting their own things out that mm-hmm. the House is waiting on. I just don't know the status of these other bills.
Sure.
But as soon as they have some breathing room, then they'll have to decide whether to concur or to set up a conference committee.
And do you plan to advise them in any way in terms of what our comfort level is with the amendments, or are you just going to let that play out?
I haven't been asked, and so I didn't really plan on interjecting unless asked. And if asked, I think my response would be to lead with some questions and try and figure out if the concerns were that the House version doesn't do enough to help us in the eyes of the Senate, I guess I'd be more likely to say don't concur and try and help us a little more. If the concern was that they're, which I hear casually from time, that they're overspent and that this is too generous, I guess at that point I would then urge them to concur. If it seems like their goal is to take something more away.
Do you think there's any value in just, because I feel like the longer the session goes, the more urgent it's going to be to reduce spending. And so there might be some value to accepting what the House has done and encouraging them to do so and finish it.
It's a guessing game, no doubt about it.
I mean, do you see there being more money down the road?
Not significant amounts, but I mean, I don't know that our numbers are all that significant. I do not think we're going to do much better than.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think it might get worse over time. So, I mean, I think that's fairly likely. So, I guess I'd be in favor of urging them to concur and trying to get our budget done.
I can try and initiate a conversation without seeming too enthusiastic. Sure. That it seems like I don't want to leave the impression like giddy here and that there's
for
something
sure,
in there
we,
that shouldn't
that's
be.
Not it.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but
we're also realistic.
I'll try and seek an opportunity to mention that in a good context.
Okay. Say on one other issue, legislative issue, the funding pool, the FTE pool, whatever we're calling this. I did sit in on a meeting with the Senate leadership yesterday and all the other elected officials. And let's see. Yep. I think every office was represented except for Josh. And the governor's office was there too. And so there's been some amendments drafted now that I received, but I think it's more appropriate for you as chair to follow this through. So I'll pass those on to you. They were developed by Claire in the AG's office and staff there. And the request from Senator Hogue was, if you have suggestions for how to improve this or fix it or alternatives, you need to provide them as soon as possible. So that's the spirit in which these were created. And there was, a direction discussed by all of us there, kind of agreed to, and that's reflected in these amendments. And basically it was kind of along the lines of one of the bullets that was included and the governor's office is supportive of this, of suggesting that the each agency get a separate line item to track this stuff themselves, and then we wouldn't have to go through the bureaucratic process of going to OMB and requesting this money, but there would also be more transparency that the legislature could see how these monies were being used by the agencies. So I haven't read the amendment, but that's what we talked about it including, and so I'm assuming that's what it does. So I'll forward that to you, and then I'm not sure. John Godfrey seemed like kind of the leader of the band, but I'll forward you that email, and then you can let me know if you need me to do anything more, but otherwise I'll assume that you're kind of going to be our spokesperson on it, you and Jill, because Jill came with me too.
Sounds good.
Can I just see a
copy of it too? Sure. I don't see why not.
Okay. Anything else? We are adjourned.